Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Tuesday morning, January 29th. It is officially Super Bowl week. Kai, you excited, my man?
Oh, yeah, I'm excited, man. I'm trying to think about what I'm going to cook. I'm going to settle on meatball subs, but I know that has nothing to do with the game or the props.
Well, of course. Yeah, not the props, but certainly part of the game, and it's the experience that you're hosting, huh?
Yeah, nothing crazy, man. Just the family, the kids, mother, in-laws, stuff like that.
Nice. Ooh, in-laws. Big out of you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm back from Vegas in Connecticut now. No action on the prop bet of whether or not I'd make my flight. No action.
Well, did you see the poll? That was pretty telling about what.
That's what I'm speaking to.
Oh man!
So I made my flight, but it was not the original flight when you posted your tweet. I had a bunch of reservations, so it was like a very convoluted story. So no action. No action.
How was the prop event though? I wanted to ask.
It was awesome, man. It was really quite the spectacle. Obviously, I lived out here 7 years, and you've noticed the growth of it. And given, you know, we had a production crew there, and it was a little, little much at times. But you know, it's grown incredibly. I mean, depending on how you count the number of props, but it's over 1,000. And wow. Really, just elaborate. Going behind the scenes on Tuesday and Wednesday was really interesting. You know, I obviously have been behind the scenes a little bit on some stuff, but it was really cool to see him kind of discuss Todd Gurley's rushing yards given the injury and CJ Anderson's emergence and just little things like that. And then seeing the backpacks of cash, it's really kind of a who's who of gambling. If you're in that little underworld, you see a lot of media members who cover this beat, and then you see a lot of the gamblers, you know, and then even some, you know, some just locals, just regular guys who do bet, but they're not like pro bettors. So it was like a kind of a mini reunion, if you will.
Was Duffel Bag Boy in attendance?
I do not believe he was. Duffel Bag Boy is more of a conventional bettor, kind of bets big on some point spreads here and there on a college football Saturday or an NFL Sunday. The pro bettors who are doing these prop bets are really advanced, and they're you know, kind of math guys and middlers and arbitragers, and to borrow some finance terms. So it's definitely like a different level than just sitting on your couch and firing hard on Michigan -3 or whatever.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's pretty awesome. Elaborate. And I have a piece coming out for ESPN.com. I believe it's going to post today. I know the TV piece is going to start running today. So a lot of balls in the air in that regard. And I'm excited because it was a lot of work. I mean, we were out there like 7 days or maybe like 5 days. But just it was fun to be back in my old stomping grounds and see some friends that I, you know, wouldn't normally see. Like Thursday night, saw some colleagues that I probably would not coordinate social plans with if I'm only in town for a couple of days. But, you know, people that, you know, I have very positive memories with. So it was a lot of fun in that regard.
That's awesome, man.
Well, look, dude, we have a busy week coming up. I'm headed to Atlanta for Radio Row. Just one day, Wednesday, I'm doing some Radio Row stuff. But I am also we got Mina Kimes coming up on this podcast. We got some potential other superstar guests down the road this week, trying to navigate schedules and coordinate and flight times and all that. But we'll have some interesting guests. Of course, we'll have Mr. Director. That's a no-brainer.
Of course.
And we'll get some of the sharp action. We'll find out from him later in the week where what moves, what's been the most significant moves on these prop bets. I know one of my favorite bets, if not my favorite, has already moved considerably. Kai, what would you say you would need, what kind of odds you would need for there to be no touchdowns? No touchdowns in the first half.
Ooh. With these offenses? Oh, man.
Yeah, but my rationale is Patriots have struggled in first quarters. Look at this. Look at the Rams last in the NFC Championship game, got a late touchdown. Like, I don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it's crazy, but I just feel like Jared Goff is going to rise to the occasion and at least go for one touchdown in the first quarter. I think
I'm saying first half. First half, no touchdown.
First, oh, Jesus. First half.
Would you take 40-1?
Oof. I don't know. I couldn't take that, man. Not in the Super Bowl, man. Not with the world watching. But I mean, we'll see. Cause
no, I'm saying, so what would you, you don't think the world, you think the world watching helps them score a touchdown?
I don't think it necessarily helps them score a touchdown, but I feel like the pressure for them to deliver, being a team that's known for a high powered offense, I just.
Yeah. Well, it opened 100-1, and I thought that was pretty ridiculous. It's been bet down to 18-1. So I felt like 30 or 40-1 was appropriate, and I saw 100-1. I said I would take that. So that got bet down to 18-1.
As always, DK, things like that make it a lot more interesting on Sunday.
Well, yeah, so it's basically saying, you know, 1 in 100, will it happen more often than 1 in 100? Like, that's basically what they're asking. And I think yes. I think there will be no touchdowns in the first half of a Super Bowl before we see 100 Super Bowls.
But scores though, field goals.
That's fine.
Anything like safety, that. But just nobody in the end zone.
Nobody in the end zone in the first half alone.
We'll see. I can't see it. Not with these teams.
Okay. Well, I just throwing it out there. All right, bud. Well, so let's get to Mina, obviously senior writer at ESPN. She does a fantastic job on all platforms. NFL guru. She's going to be covering the Super Bowl for ESPN this weekend, credentialed and do all that. And you got to go check out her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Very cool that she has a dog as part of the artwork and the actual podcast. We appreciate her taking the busy time out of her schedule. So we'll have Mina on this podcast later in the week. We definitely have Mr. Director John Murray and then some potential guests as well. Kai, what do you say we get to it?
Let's go.
All right. We are now pleased to welcome in senior writer Mina Kimes here on the podcast. And Mina, I think you are the first female guest here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
It's an honor.
Yeah, here we are, 2019, still distinguishing female and male.
Yeah, I hope that very progressive sound I just made wasn't too woofy. It is an honor, though. Yeah. I'm glad to be breaking the ceiling of your podcast.
Yeah, it was more of condemning me and this platform more than anything else that you should be. It's like the old, some of the old stuff. How long have you been a female? Right. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm just a writer. Well, awesome. Thanks for coming on. And obviously, this is a gambling podcast. So the question is, just to start out, like, how much are you familiar with gambling and obviously everything headed that way following the PASPA and legalization last year?
Yeah, you know, I've, as an NFL writer and analyst, I follow it pretty closely just because it's so, I guess, tied up with the NFL's business and the future of the NFL. And I think I've always felt the NFL is by far the best sport to bet on. So, I think it's always just been interesting to me to see how not only would it affect the business and, you know, it affects our business as well, but also interest in the league.
Well, I appreciate that because it is sometimes frowned upon for people who are not just drinking, but chugging the Kool-Aid and that, but it is like the worst kept secret that gambling is such a big part of football. And I think a large reason that is just that it's easy to digest the point spread. It's like, oh, they just not have to win the game, but they have to win the game by at least 4 points. That's so much easier than like baseball money lines.
Completely.
I maintain that the gambling moment of 2018 football season was Todd Gurley falling down, not just because of the reaction on a high-profile game, but just the fact that Gurley was answering questions in the locker room about it in a total normal fashion, kind of like fantasy, and even tweeted about it saying, I don't care, blah, blah, blah. But just the fact that it's sort of arrived, that was kind of my gut, is that it's now arrived and people just kind of take it in stride as opposed to this taboo topic.
Yeah, there's been a couple moments in the playoffs too where it's fun to watch. Like, I'm on Twitter when I'm not at the game following along as I'm watching and taking notes. And it has been, I do feel like now, maybe more in the past, when, you know, a backdoor cover happens the last second or whatever, it does feel like that's where the conversation immediately moves, maybe in a way it didn't a few years ago. And that's interesting.
Right. And where do you think we're going to head? Because I know CBS has been on record this week saying they're not going to mention the point spread, but how far away are we, do you think, given that the NFL will have a team with the Raiders in Las Vegas not too far away, and then obviously partnerships, and who knows what's going to happen moving forward?
I think, like, general discussion of the spread and where, like, you know, money's going at various times, I could see that sort of entering the mainstream conversation and being legitimized. I don't think, you know, part of the reason I mentioned football is a great sport to bet on, because, and you accurately said, because it's simple, but also there's great potential for in-game betting just due to the flow of the game and the nature of it, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's a little further off, but I imagine they'll get there at some point too.
Yeah, I've always told my bosses I want to be the Dave Kataya of gambling. I want to cut into our Monday Night Football and explain some stuff in the little box or whatever it takes. Yeah. But on a more serious note, I do think there's a news component to it. I thought Joe Buck did a great job on Thursday Night Football earlier this year when the Browns played the Jets and the Browns were favored. And he just mentioned it as to provide context. And, hey, not only does this team have one win in the previous two seasons, but here they are favorites in the game. And it just kind of added another element, not like, gee, who'd you bet on, Troy? But it was like it just added some, I don't know, just credibility and another layer.
It's a better reflection of actual sentiment than anything. Like, so this whole week, there's been this discussion about, are the Patriots actually underdogs, right? And you see online, there's people are constantly pulling, well, here's a clip of a talking head saying Brady's done. Well, let's look at, you know, I believe the Patriots were favored in, if not every game, but like one, right? So to me, that's a much more valuable indicator of whether a team is actually being seen as an underdog than, you know, one random guy yelling on TV.
Right, because odds makers not just do not consumed with projecting the final score, it's based on public perception. And that is basically a way to quantify such a qualitative component. It's the number, right? Because that's based on equal betting, if in theory, that odds makers are projecting. Not that they think the final score is going to be exactly whatever it is, but it's based on that the public, it will drive equal sort of betting handle. And as I look about it, actually, the conference title game was the only time the Patriots were underdogs all season. So it was against the Chiefs. Right.
Nobody believed in the Patriots. You know? and barely so, despite the fact that they had struggled on the road all year. The Chiefs were very good. Obviously, you know, the game came down to the wire. So the fact that they got that kind of respect is in itself telling.
So here we are, a handful of days ahead of the game. And where do you, like, so should the Patriots be favorites or underdogs in your eyes?
They should be favorites. What, it's at three right now?
It's at three some places, 2.5 others.
Pretty narrow. Yeah, I think that's about accurate. You know, I've spent some time looking at the matchups, thinking about sort of just these teams and where they are right now in the season. I think what that reflects is how good the Patriots have been in the postseason. They've been significantly better over the last couple of weeks than they were during the regular season. They were good during the regular season. They're the Patriots, you know. But a lot of the things that they struggled with at times have sort of dissipated. The pass rush has been amazing, largely due to coaching and defensive scheming. Brady's been better in the postseason than he was in the regular season. So I think that's probably fair.
And I was going to ask you is, why is this team continuing to, like, I loved the Chiefs against them in the last game, and obviously I didn't expect them to come out so flat, but that's part coaching, I think, for the Patriots, that they're just
so
ready for
coaching.
The moment, and they are also ready against the Chargers, right? They took the kickoff, they won the coin toss, took the ball early, had something on film, and they're just, I mean, I think Belichick's the best coach in any sport in sports history. And it's just like unfair. And I would just love to have a placebo effect. If he had another quarterback and not Brady, how good would he be? Like, I would love to answer that unanswerable question. But what is it about this team, this particular team? Because I do think Brady's showing his age a little bit. So you just touched on it a moment ago. But what else is there with this team?
Well, so in these two games against the Chargers and the Chiefs, I think, you know, less so the Chargers. So the Chargers went lighter on defense. You know, they were playing the multiple DBs that they played against the Ravens, and everyone was like, why would you have the same game plan against Tom Brady? They held Lamar, you know, crazy. A lot of that was just the personnel they had, injuries at the linebacker position. So they were struggling to stop the run. And then you face the Chiefs, who had come, like, they people were higher, I think, on that defense than they should have been based on the performance throughout the regular season, in particular the run defense. So the Patriots come out super heavy. I mean, they really, you know, they run 21, I believe, more than any other team in the NFL. The Chiefs have struggled all year to stop 21. And so they come out and they have this long, grinding, just, you know, choking drive at the beginning, right? And that's the brilliance of that team, is that they are always able to dictate the pace of the game, play the style of football they want. And then at the end, when the defense is gassed, as they always are, Brady does his thing and he's not touched. And you see that formula over and over again.
It is such a simple approach. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just so simple that a lot of times these other teams just kind of shoot themselves in the foot. Like, I felt the Andy Reid timeout at the end of the first half, when the Patriots had the ball at the end of the first half. Like, you obviously have a weak defense. Don't get cute, because if you give them a first down, then you're going to give up points, and they end up giving up seven, not even just three. So I agree that it at times it can just be that simple, that you kind of oversimplified Belichick's genius, but it can sometimes be that little. All right, so you simplified it a little bit, but sometimes it is that simple, because something I've brought up many times, and whether it be my Twitter rants or really on this podcast, is that Andy Reid had no business calling a timeout when the Patriots had the ball at the end of the first half. It was just third and four, and so he made his defense come up with a stop and put the pressure on, where it looks like he could have just got to halftime 7-0. Instead, they gave up seven instead of three. So a lot of times, going back to, like, I do think Belichick's a genius, but a lot of times he's just doing the kind of the easy, clean thing.
Yeah, and that's always it with the Patriots, right? It's like they do the little things well, and that's making the right coaching decisions, especially, you know, about timeouts, that kind of thing, but also the fact that they're not penalized often. Now, sure, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about that, but from guys who have played on the team and have described sort of the style of coaching and the things that they learn there, a lot of it has to do with just pure discipline.
What do we make of the Rams? Because so much of betting, like we talked about a moment ago, is perception, right? What kind of point spread can you come up with that's going to lead to or induce equal action? Well, I mean, the Rams, like, everyone's like, oh, they don't belong here. The Saints got robbed, and Goff, you know, Belichick's going to run circles around him with two weeks. But, I mean, they are a pretty loaded team, especially on the defensive front line. Who knows with Gurley's health? Like, what do we make of this team with this young QB and this young head coach?
So the Rams are kind of difficult for people to evaluate because they came out of the gate with this incredible high-powered offense, right? And then they had a difficult stretch starting with the Lions game about two-thirds of the way through the season. Had a few games where they struggled, kind of figured it out. But Goff really hasn't been as good as he was in the first half of the season. He sort of peaked with that Vikings game where he was amazing. In the last game, the two postseason games, it's been interesting, sort of the different style against the Cowboys. It was this very run-centric offense in terms of production. And then in the last game, you really saw actually no run game at all versus New Orleans. And then Goff kind of bailed them out at the end and actually outplayed Drew Brees in the final minutes or whatnot. So it's hard to kind of say, well, what are we going to get from them? I personally think they're going to really use a heavy dose of Gurley and Anderson. If I had to pick a weakness in the Patriots defense, it would probably be stopping the run. And I think McVay really wants to get back to that. You know, obviously it does help with play action. It helps the offensive line. And the Patriots' pass rush has been a lot more successful. Another thing that's been a lot more successful in the playoffs than it was during the regular season. And I think McVay is going to, typically the Rams, they play 11 every time and they use the same personnel, but then they do all this crazy stuff. I think actually he's going to go a little bit heavier than expected too to try to neutralize the blitz.
So you think the Rams' running game will be the focus, at least early on, to establish everything else, including the play action?
Yeah, I was actually eyeing the MVP odds for Gurley. Which,
okay. All right, now we're talking my language.
Yeah, well, they were actually a little bit not as good as I thought they would be. I thought, you know, after the last game, we'd get some tasty odds on that. But I don't think he is probably a little bit hurt, okay, even though he's denied it. But I actually think a lot of his disappearing act in the last game had to do with game flow, as McVay said, the nature of the Saints defense, what they were good at, and then just a couple of mistakes he made early on. So I wouldn't be surprised if McVay comes out and uses him a lot in this game.
You know, it's funny. I went behind the scenes out in Las Vegas on the making of these props, and probably the biggest disparity was the Todd Gurley props. And each odds maker of the three that got together had to kind of just come with their own numbers initially. And it was for rushing yards. One had 59.5, the other had 60.5. And the other had 73.5. So, you know, 14-yard difference, which is very rare because they're both – it's not like random people on the street, right? It's like both – all people that kind of think the same. So you're going to have a tighter sort of variance. But this one, they just didn't know what to expect, but they erred on the high side. A couple things, two-week rest, that game against the Saints with four carries was just so random because against the Cowboys, he had 115 on the ground. So they're just going to kind of trust what they see over the course of the long haul. So I do think – because Gurley, they split up out wide. And in that Saints game, he dropped a third down. That would have been a first down, hit him in the hand. So I think it's not that they weren't using him at all. It's just sort of – it is interesting, though. You're right. It's what to expect, and no one really knows because C.J. Anderson has been so productive.
Yeah, and just thinking about the Patriots defense. So, you know, I mentioned that the pass rush has been a lot better than they thought during the regular season. And a lot of that has to do with just Belichick and Brian Flores, the defensive play caller, what they've done with stunts and blitzes has been really creative and successful. But they've, as a result, they have sacrificed some in run defense. Meanwhile, the secondary is probably the best unit on the Patriots defense. So I guess I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of short, quick pass, much the way the Patriots used James White. I think we could see Todd Gurley used in the same way in this game.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, the voters are married to Goff like they are Brady.
Exactly.
If both had a big game, like the Falcons Super Bowl, where James White had three touchdowns and Brady still won the MVP. It's just, you know, sort of a quarterback award. Although I maintain it's foolish to bet Brady MVP because it's like even money. And if you're going to do that, just bet the money line on the Pats and don't get too cute. And just as someone who lost money in 2007 on the Tim Duncan MVP and when Tony Parker won it, I can speak from experience when what it takes to get too cute. So it's funny you mentioned that because I have two favorite bets in terms of prop bets. One is the longest touchdown of the game, either team, under 49.5 yards. I think that's way high for a team like the Patriots, which you would think, and I want to get your opinion on this. You know, we all know sort of the recipe for the Pats is to get pressure on Brady. Well, he's going to get rid of the ball so quickly, a lot of the underneath stuff. And then the Rams, I mean, the Patriots have that bend but don't break defense on the secondary. So I think like giving up a 50-yard touchdown is pretty unlikely.
Yeah, if it happens, it's going to be at the end of the game, I think.
Right.
Or special
teams.
But I think you're right. Yeah, and you know, Goff, he does, they love those deep crossing routes, Los Angeles, which I could see them attempting, with Cooks and Woods, but it might, I don't know. I think those routes also take a long time. Goff takes a long time to get rid of the ball, and it's partly is the nature of their offense, and I think the Patriots are going to be pretty aggressive setting pressure on him.
So you think that's the recipe for, to beat Goff, pressure?
Yeah.
I mean, that's every quarterback,
I always hate saying that. I know. About quarterbacks, it's like, yeah, the key to beating Brady is to get pressure on him, which no one's been able to do. But it's certainly the case with Goff. You know, his completion percentage under pressure falls well below 50%. And I think it puts him, like, actually in the bottom tier of quarterbacks. So he's much, much worse when he's under pressure.
Okay, so even worse compared to other quarterbacks under pressure.
Yes, worse than Brady under pressure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think the Giants defensive front from 2007 or whatever it is out there. Although that's the thing, the Rams. Okay, so let's talk about the Rams defense because Aaron Donald made a huge play against Drew Brees, forced the interception. But the Achilles heel is running all over this team, and that's what the Eagles did. That's what a lot of teams did. But the Cowboys were not, depending on what conspiracy theory you believe as to why. But is that the weakness of the Rams' defensive front, just running the ball?
Yes, and that's yet another example of a strange, uncharacteristic postseason. Well, I guess it's not that strange, given that both the Rams and the Patriots performed better in the postseason than in the regular season, so they're here. But the Rams' run defense was not good at all during the regular season, and they held the Cowboys and the Saints to less than 50 rushing yards on average, which is crazy, right? It's like really, really good. Ndamukong Suh in particular has just been phenomenal, but the linebackers and safeties as well have been super impressive. Now, that said, they have been stacking the box and overcommitting to stop the run in a lot of these games. Brady will punish them for that.
Right.
So, you know, I think that they're probably going to have to do that, otherwise Sony Michel is just going to destroy them, but I'm not quite sure if they'll stick to it through the entire game.
You know, it's funny. Look at the two teams the Patriots have beaten. They played the Chargers, which had this like ridiculous spot in terms of these back-to-back road games, flying cross-country, early
so
time
unfair.
Slot, like, and then had to prepare for a guy like Lamar Jackson, then the next week Tom Brady. I just think it was unfair. I think that's the best way to put it. And then the next week, they faced a team that ended up firing their defensive coordinator because he was playing safeties 50 yards back on against a QB who couldn't throw the ball deep. So what do we maybe the Rams are just – because the Rams did open up as a favorite, remember, 1.5 in terms of the power ratings. Now that's just power ratings. That's everything. It's not, you know, real life, so to speak. But, I mean, are the Patriots that good? I mean, I don't know. I mean, we talked about their coaching, what they do in the postseason, but they've had some stinkers this season.
Yeah. The Rams have the best football player on the field, the aforementioned Aaron Donald, right? Like if I was, well, after, I was going to say if I was building a team from scratch, I would start with him, but that's not true. I would start with quarterback. But
you would start with who?
Incredible. I would start with the quarterback.
Yeah,
but I just he is such a game wrecker, and it's funny even when he doesn't show up in the box score. You know, they have to account for him on every play. He's double teamed. Brady, again, the pressure thing, right? But it's not just pressure. It's pressure up the middle, which, oh, right. And Aaron Donald's the best interior pass rusher in the NFL, arguably of the last like 20 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it does seem like they have at least the formula, to contend with them to stop this offense, you know, especially because of Aaron Donald, like when he gets double teamed in the past, the Rams sometimes haven't generated as much insignificant or a sufficient pass rush outside of him. But Sue, as I mentioned, has been really, really good in the postseason. Dante Fowler has emerged as well, and you could see a lot of him in this game. And the linebackers have been playing better than usual, although that's who I think Belichick's probably going to target. So I guess all of which is to say, this isn't the Broncos 2015 defense that Wade Phillips coached that beat Brady.
Right.
It just doesn't have that talent. But there are, like, enough players who could generate turnovers or sacks or strip sacks or, you know, break open the game. And I would say Tlaib and Peters as well. Peters, I'm sure they're going to go after him, but those are two cornerbacks who get turnovers. So there's a reason to believe, I guess, that the Rams defense can do enough to keep the offense in it.
I mean, they got to be more competent than the first two games that the Patriots played in the playoffs.
They're a better defense, yes, I believe. And they're a better defense, like, suited to play the Patriots in particular.
Gotcha. What, do you expect a high scoring or low scoring game?
You know, I've been puzzling over this for a little bit. I think it's not going to be as high as people expect. I'll just say that. That's such a cop out answer.
No, but you like the under. That's an appropriate answer on this podcast.
What is it right now? What's the point total?
56.5.
That seems high to me.
I would say it seems high too, but it also is the 2018-2019 football season and where everything's, you know, scoring is a plenty.
Yeah. I'd say both these defenses are pretty healthy as well, and I think there's not like enormous weaknesses in the way I think I saw in some of the opponents earlier on.
So my other prop bet that I liked as a, you know, sort of a long shot, not even sort of, a long shot, and it's been bet down incredibly, and I texted the odds makers. They said they've taken enough action that they lowered it. No touchdown at all in the first half. They were offering 100-1 on that. 100-1.
Oh.
So now it's 18. It's 18-1, which I think is more appropriate.
Oh. Yeah, I wouldn't think that.
Because you don't think it's going to happen. But look, the Patriots have started slow in a lot of first quarters. Who knows? I mean, the Rams started, I mean, crazy things have happened. Brady threw a touchdown on the goal line. Anyways, so that's why I asked you. I felt like 100-1 was insane. 18-1.
If I could just bet on the Rams not scoring a touchdown in the first half, that would intrigue me.
Okay. Why is that?
I do not think the Patriots will get blanked. I think that Belichick is just, he's such a defensive genius, and especially in this postseason, I've been really impressed by what they've been able to do with not like the most marquee talent in the front seven. I just think he's likely to have McVay's number.
You know, I've been wondering that because Belichick was once a genius too, back in the days with the Giants and I mean, granted he had LT running around, but, you wonder if there's going to be a passing of the torch or whatnot, but obviously, Belichick is going to throw a curveball. He did it to Mahomes in the regular season meeting in the first half, and he's going to do something for Goff. I'm so interested to see what happens, but you just wonder when sort of McVay is going to take the baton, if at all.
He has, yeah, right. He's, I think, Belichick's outcoached him so far in this playoffs, in my opinion. McVay's made a few mistakes, like not when he kicked the field goal in the last game. That was kind of shocking to me,
for example.
Oh,
hallelujah for saying that. I still don't understand, and I still understand people defending it.
He's just made a few blunders, I suppose, some time management issues. So, I mean, you know, he's 33. I think he just turned 33. Like, Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick for a reason. He just doesn't make those mistakes.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned it again because we do have a lot of drops here, one of which...
Kicking is for losers.
As we've been just cementing all season. And then Bob Lee has some other movie quotes that we might have to find. our way into a couple times, but I say this a lot. It's not even just like the schematic. I don't think Dee Ford is offside if he's a Patriot. Like things like that that you maybe established in training camp or whatever it takes in the little things, the minutiae during the course of a week of practice, and that's where what separates. But I think Belichick has kind of gotten messed up a couple times with some decisions too.
In the postseason?
This year.
Against the Vikings.
Against the Dolphins in the Miami Miracle. And just things like that. It hasn't been very Belichick-like.
Brady's made some weird mental errors as well during the regular season. And this is why, you know, again, like, nobody said the Patriots sucked or that they had no chance. But there was questions about them because of things that actually happened during the regular season. Again, like, this team just seems to turn it on for the postseason. Just in every phase of the game, they've been playing so well. I don't know. It's just really hard to bet against them.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So who you got?
I've got New England in this one.
In a relatively low scoring, sounds like?
Yeah, I think the other thing is that you're going to really see the Patriots try to manage the clock. So they're all about dictating the pace of the game, right? And I think they're going to really try to grind out a bunch of long drives, keep that Rams offense off the field, and I could see them being successful.
Yeah, I like it. By the way, I found a prop that you may like. First half points by the Rams, 13.5.
Ooh, I would take the over.
Okay, over, because earlier you said that you would take a lot of like high odds with no touchdown.
Well, if the odds were crazy.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's really accurate.
Good number,
I think they'll get they could get a couple teeters off.
What are some crazy props that you've always chuckled at over the years, or even in this packet? Because we got 30 something pages, 1,000 props. What are some?
You have
38 pages of props, I believe.
38 pages. 32, how many of them are about Maroon 5?
None. Those are offshore only. So the legal ones, you cannot bet on Gatorade color, length of the national anthem, halftime acts, stuff like that. But, you know, we talk about them all here. I'm just not a music guy, so I haven't quite dived into that all.
Yes.
But, I know a lot of people will be making
wagering those. These.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's some really silly stuff, but they've also figured out how to crossover prop, right? So James Harden's very popular right now in terms of all his scoring. So they'll crossover his points that weekend. And I mean, it's crazy. Like I did the history of the prop piece that I wrote, and it's going to hit SportsCenter. And they did like Mike Tyson rounds finish in a fight once. They did that with Oscar De La Hoya. Tiger Woods is final score, the Masters final round. And they, you have to wait obviously a few months to cash that. So just bizarre stuff. But hey, more than 50% of the money bet on the Super Bowl is for the prop bets. So they are exciting and draw a lot of interest.
Well, I like trolley stuff. I mean, this probably isn't on here, but I am very curious to see if, so part of me just feels like the Patriots are going to fake a punt. I don't know. Just like, troll the Rams.
Right.
There.
So you're like, okay.
And I part of me thinks the Rams are going to run Philly. So those are two things I'm very curious to see.
So it's funny. There's always a prop, the over under amount of people who will throw a pass in the game.
Ooh.
So it's always 2.5, right? And then
yes.
The question is like garbage time and then the holder, the punter with Johnny Hecker, obviously. So usually it's like a huge like favorite to go under this. This year, I believe they opened up like pick 'em because of all the
really,
Edelman could throw one. And another kind of wrinkle is that if it's a 2-point conversion, doesn't count, right? That's not a statistic. It's just a conversion attempt. So that's another layer to this. But then, it's not like the Patriots are going to be caught off guard by Hecker. I mean, they know this guy's done it.
Well, here's one. Longest field goals, 47.5. Huh. That's definitely smash the over on that.
So the question is, will they attempt one, right? Sometimes they just will go for it or punt or whatever.
Do you see what Greg the Leg did?
He's money. Like I said the day the props came out that I would take 100-1 odds on him MVP.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, why not?
I thought he wasn't scheduled to talk like at media week. I'm like, that dude's the MVP of the championship. Where's he?
I think I read that he's like hurt a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I read that too. It was concerning.
Yeah, that's not.
I want to take a Hecker having a better passer rating than Jared Goff. That's another one. He's a great passer. He's
one for one.
I mean, you know, that's he played quarterback. Takes. Yeah. That was crazy. I think, yeah, what else am I looking at here? I'm reading them all. If anyone jumps out, will either team score four straight?
Are you going to be doing some Radio Row this year?
Yeah, so I'll be recording my podcast on Wednesday, and then, which is the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Right. And then we're going to do a Twitter show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I think we're doing props on Friday, by the way. So okay. I got to study up. Probably stupid ones.
And, well, I was going to ask you about, like, how much do you think you'll get asked about this?
The props?
Yeah.
I think maybe on Friday, if we publicize some of them, could see some interest in that. But I'm looking at the list that they've got, and there's a lot of Maroon 5 and Travis Scott questions. So a lot of dancing related props.
Right, right. All right. So that was my next question. You mentioned the pod. I want to talk about it because that is obviously a big thing. So it's the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. And Lenny is your co-host, who also happens to be your dog.
Yes. I think it's the only NFL podcast co-host to buy a dog. I can't be comprehensive, and, you know, who knows. But it's the only one to my knowledge. They're actually really the only sports podcast I know of that's co-hosted by a dog.
So tell us.
The only podcast I know that's co-hosted by a dog.
Tell us about Lenny. How long? How old?
The podcast, Lenny's contributions are appearing on the artwork, sitting on my lap while I record. And then at the end, I always ask my guests. Hey, by the way, it's like a pretty hardcore football podcast.
No, I know. I listened to it. You had Hawk on last week.
Yeah. And then at the end, I usually ask the guests five questions and Lenny gets to ask one of them. And it's usually quite rude.
Ah, okay. Good to know.
Kind of his thing.
Well, this is back to back podcast. We've talked about a dog. Cause I was in Vegas at the house of the shoot. And they had Gabby, and Gabby is a 14-year-old rescue dachshund.
Oh.
And this is just, I told the story a week ago, but I still have to tell it again. So basically, Gabby is just enamored with bubbles on the hot tub outside. So any house guest that shows up, no matter who it is, if it's like a regular maintenance guy or just people who've never been in the house like myself and the camera crew, she goes nuts and just barks, barks, barks. And you have to go outside. And she shows you the bubbles, and then she tries to like bite the bubbles that come up while she's still on the deck. And we have to, you know, fake excitement how it's the greatest thing in the world. Keep in mind, this is a city that has Cirque du Soleil shows, and she just thinks this is like the greatest invention ever. And then we go back inside after she gets to show you her favorite toy, and she's quiet the rest of the day.
Yes. My life similarly revolves around my dog and catering to his whims and needs. I'm waiting for him to start demanding a check for the podcast.
Yes.
But so far, he seems pretty content with his canned
so
food.
So what kind of dog is Lenny?
Oh, he's a mix. He's about 7 or 8. Can't tell for sure. Mm-hmm. Beagle, Chihuahua, Pomeranian.
Wow.
It's very unclear. Also unclear, I guess.
Small.
You know, he's a real superstar, though.
He is. So what was it like, that conversation suggesting he should be part of the artwork and the podcast?
Well, it started minimal, and then people just kept demanding more Lenny, more Lenny. And I did it. So with the podcast, the five questions at the end, I usually ask his question in the voice I use when I talk to him. And then I was like, you know what? It's unprofessional. It's like annoying, and I don't want to ask like football players. And so I cut it out for a week, and there was an uproar. People said, bring back Lenny's voice. How can you silence Lenny? So
it is amazing.
Superstar.
Dogs are awesome. And anytime you can weave them in. So good job by you to do that. And obviously great work across all of our platforms. You are a star. So awesome. And thank you for taking the time. I know a busy week for you. You have a ton going on. You're traveling to Atlanta as well. And good to have you on here talking about betting and just Super Bowl 50, whatever number it is, 53 in general.
Yes, I hope I'm right.
Yeah, that's all right. You don't have to be right. You just have to be right 56% of the time. If you can be right 56% of the time against the spread, you'd be a millionaire. So
yes, we'll see.
You're good. All right. Thank you again, Mina. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks to Mina Kimes. But right now, a word from one of our sponsors. The biggest sporting event of the year is coming up this Sunday, and you'll want a way to get skin in the game. Don't miss out on the final opportunity to play fantasy football this season with Single Game Showdown, the newest way to play at DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports. DraftKings is ending this season with a bang for the big game by offering new users a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. If you've been thinking about trying DraftKings, now's the time. DraftKings has taken fantasy football from just 1 week to just one game, making it easier to draft your lineup. All you have to do is draft six players from the big game, one captain, and five other players. Your captain will earn 1.5 times the points. You can go for value or for star power to anchor your lineup. It's that simple. Six players from one game. Just stay under the salary cap and see how your team stacks up against the competition. Go to DraftKings.com or download the app now. For a limited time, use code Doug to enter the all-new Single Game Showdown contest for free this Sunday with your first deposit and compete for the $1 million top prize. That's code Doug, D-O-U-G, only at DraftKings. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. All right, Kai, an abbreviated podcast for this Tuesday. Awesome having Mina Kimes on. Very funny, very insightful, very knowledgeable. And you got to go check out her podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Kai, you big fan of having pets? You got any of your own?
Oh, man, I had a dog growing up. Lived to be 17 years old. I mean,
holy cow.
It was a cockapoo. So, you know, those mutt, for lack of a better term. I don't know if that's the politically correct term in dog world or pet world, but
it works.
It was a mutt. And those things live forever, man.
Nice. Well, dude, look, thanks for coordinating your schedule. I'm hitting the road, and we'll have another podcast coming up from Atlanta and hopefully some more special guests this week.
Awesome.
All right, bud. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.